You're listening to the Body Pros podcast coverage of CROI 2009, the 16th Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections. The conference took place in Montreal, Canada, from February 8th through February 11th, 2009.
In this study summary, Salim Abdul-Karim of the Center for the AIDS Program of Research in South Africa discusses the results of the HPTN-035 trial of vaginal microbicides for the prevention of HIV infection in women. After the discussion, there will be a series of questions and answers.
So I'm sitting here in front of you today to share with you very briefly the results of the HPTN-035 trial, which is a trial undertaken under the auspices of the Microbicide Trials Network, funded by the NIAID of the National Institutes of Health. The study was conducted in five countries and enrolled 3,099 women in these countries. The backdrop to this study is that one of the greatest challenges we face to the HIV epidemic in Africa is the high risk of HIV infection, particularly in young women. Indeed, we've seen over the last several years the feminization of the HIV epidemic and the particular challenges that we face in providing women an opportunity to protect themselves against HIV. Indeed, how would you convey to a woman in a rural community who is married and is trying to have children the concepts of how to protect herself from HIV infection? We can't promote abstinence in that setting. We cannot promote faithfulness because she's already faithful. She is planning on having children, so we cannot promote condom use. And circumcision is something that she would encourage her partner to have. So we really do not have in our armamentarium methods for prevention that women can use. And so this study looked at two particular microbicidal gels, buffer gel and Pro 2000, and in a four-arm study compared HIV incidence rates as well as pregnancy rates and sexually transmitted infection rates across these four arms within the study. Two of the arms were control arms. One was an arm that had a placebo gel, and the other was an arm that had no gel. In short, the main finding is that Pro 2000 gel, which is a naphthalene sulfonate, a polymer, an anionic polymer, was shown to have a 30% reduction in HIV incidence. And this effect was observed when compared to the placebo arm. A similar level of effect at 33% was observed when compared to the no gel arm. This finding was not statistically significant because the study was not powered to answer a question of 30% efficacy. However, when we look at the corroborating evidence in the subgroup analysis, what we find is further evidence that supports our overall conclusion that this is a promising candidate as a microbicide. One of those analyses looks at whether the effect is stronger and more prominent in those who've used the gel more often, and particularly in those women who used condoms to a lesser extent but used high levels of gel. In the study, buffer gel showed no effect on STDs, contraception, and HIV. So on that note, I think for the microbicide field, which has over the last several years had studies that were stopped either for harm or for difficulty in ensuring adequate incidence rates or have shown no effect, this is the first study that now shows that we have a promising candidate. Because the result is not statistically significant, we do not regard it as a definitive conclusion that Pro 2000 is a microbicide, but we certainly view it as very promising, particularly in light of the fact that there is another study of Pro 2000 whose results will be released sometime later this year.
Professor, how did you measure adherence?
Thank you for the question. So within the HPTN-035 trial, we measured adherence by participant recall of the product use and condom use at the last sexual act and over the last 7 days before they attended their clinic visit. And there was strong correlation between the two measures. It is self-reported data, so it has all the caveats of self-report. But that's the one measure we have.
A supplementary question then. In the Carrigard study, self-reported adherence was a great deal higher, adherence measured by dye.
So when we look at adherence within the trial, what we have is just about 81% of last sexual acts involved gel use. If they were not using the gel, we would not see the level of effect we did. So I think that's the one positive thing, that what we've shown is that use of the gel is associated with some measure of protection. Ideally, we'd like to have a study where everybody used gel and nobody used any condoms. That's not the real world, unfortunately. So we, within the constraints of the real world, I think what we've shown is, I mean, it's amazing that we can even show a 30% effect. It means, you know, quite a lot within the broad prevention arena.
Can you describe the mechanism of action of this compound? It doesn't contain an ARV, I don't believe. And how does it differ from the Carrigard and other formulations?
Sure. So you're absolutely right. Proto-1000 is not an antiretroviral containing compound. Instead, the way it works is that it has an anionic charge. It's negatively charged. And when it's inserted in the vagina, the way it works is that the virus in its variable loops on the envelope has a positive charge. So Pro-2000 attaches to the variable loops of the virus, and as a result, the virus is no longer able to attach to the host cell. So it prevents attachment of the virus to the cell. And its effect, therefore, is through its presence in the vagina at the time of the sexual act.
Can you give us some numbers, a number of people who developed HIV infection versus those didn't, you know, when you say 30% reduction, what numbers are we talking about?
So I'll actually present the detail of these figures in my presentation. I'll be very happy to give you the information in a document at the end of this presentation. In fact, if anybody wants the detailed information, please come up to me or to Ann Coletti, and we'll be happy to provide it. So the overall incidence of HIV within the study is, well, we had 194 cases of HIV. And the distribution differed across the arms, and that's how we show the effect. The incidence rate was just over 4 per 100 person years within the trial. And that gave us enough power to show an effect that was in the region of around 50%. We had much lower power to show an effect at the level of 30%. If we look at the other measures we've used of pregnancy and so on, we had those effect sizes were similar across the four arms, and so we didn't show any effect. If you want any more specific data, for example, retention rate was 94% within the trial. So in other words, only 6% of the women were lost to follow-up. We had about 73% condom use within the trial. Despite that level of condom use and 81% gel use, we were able to show a 30% benefit.
How many pregnancies did you have during the trial?
I'll have to check that. I can't remember offhand. It was 11.1% within the trial overall.
Was there distribution of pregnancy among the groups, or were they similar?
They were similar. They ranged between 10.5 and 11.5.
I have a question concerning the 035 trial. 30% does not sound very impressive. Is there any thinking about how can it be improved? Are there any plans to do it further?
Yes, I think we would ideally have liked to see a bigger effect within the trial. However, it's 30% against a backdrop where we've had difficulty in showing any level of efficacy in many of the other products that have gone before. I think among the challenges that we face is to try and improve adherence, and in particular to focus on those populations within the countries involved where condom use levels are not as high. and where women will be more adherent to the gel, because we find a bigger effect among those women who've used more gel and fewer condoms. So I think that's among the challenges that we face. There's also a new generation of products that's also moving forward, and we would hope that those products, which have different strategies of use and different levels of efficacy in animal studies, would also show promise. To answer your question in terms of the future trials that are being undertaken, I think it remains for us to see what comes out of the British trial. If that trial shows a level of effectiveness in this order of around 30 to 40%, then I think it's very compelling, even though we did not show statistical significance, that that is a level of effectiveness that we can see within the trial. And to contextualize that, for a woman who has no other option, in other words, a woman who's trying to fall pregnant, who has a migrant husband who is at high risk of HIV, who's faithful to her husband, what other option is there? So we are looking at a situation where this product could be a niche product for a group of women who have no other options to protect themselves against HIV.
I have one more follow-up question about the British study, the P study. You suggest, I think, that it's not powered to show a result of 30%. Do you think that will have so that it won't be statistically significant? Is there any way to, can they change the study at this point, is there anything they can do to try and improve, to show that kind of effect, or will it make a difference that it won't be statistically significant? Is there something to be done to kind of improve the rollout by just improving the result in that?
So there are designs that are available called adaptive designs, where you can change the trial midway so that you can allocate people differently to obtain this. Our trial wasn't designed in that way. Our trial had preset endpoints. We predetermined what we were looking for within the study. And so when that was achieved, the study was stopped. We were stopped at the time when we were blinded. We didn't know what this result was. And so that's part of the risks we take in designing trials. We aim for a particular level, and we don't reach it, it's part of the challenges we face. There's no specific way in which we could have, you know, looked at the data and say, well, actually, if we do a few more HIV infections, we'll get a statistically significant result. Unfortunately, then that would not be acceptable.
So for the MDP trial, that's also true. I guess they can't change it.
Well, the MDP trial is a much larger trial. Mm-hmm. It has about three times the sample size and about three times as many endpoints as well. So it is powered to answer this question at 30%.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebodypro.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us.
Thank you for listening to this report from CROI 2009. For more coverage of this conference, visit us online at thebodypro.com/CROI2009.